As you probably already know, we swear a lot in this podcast and talk about topics that can sometimes be hard to listen to. But I wanted to let you know that this episode has references to suicide. So listen with care, and if you're struggling or looking for help, check out the resources in our show notes. This is Static, a party girl's memoir, written by me, Ashley King. When you left me in the last episode, Britt and I were off to Bali, but it didn't go as planned.
Hello, is this World MasterCard?
Oh my God, Ash, your new teeth are like way cuter anyways.
Britt! Britt, do you feel okay?
I'll admit it, I was relieved to be heading to New Zealand without her. But I barely made it to the hostel before I was in the hospital.
Ashley, can you see me? Can you see me?
And 3 weeks later, I was blind, broke, and on my way back home with my mom. If you're new to the podcast, you should probably start at episode 1 for all the juicy details. Oh, you're still here? Great, because I definitely don't want to be. We went home after that, saw more doctors, did more tests.
Can you see the bottom line on that chart, Ashley? Okay, what about the top line? The big E? Let's try this. Ashley, how many fingers am I holding up?
Didn't matter. I had failed all of the tests. My doctors said that majority of my eyesight was gone and that they didn't think it was going to come back.
I'm so sorry, Ashley, but I don't think there's anything else we can do.
That was when they prescribed me antidepressants. What did they know? My eyesight might come back. Days turned into weeks as I sat in the guest room of my mother's house because, of course, she rented out my room to a Mexican exchange student. I thought this was all just a bad dream I was going to wake up from. But then those weeks turned into months and nothing was changing. It was like my own Groundhog Day hell. Every day, I'd open my eyes, hopeful that something had changed, hopeful that I'd gotten my eyesight back, but I didn't get it. I could see in my dreams, perfect color, vivid images. But then I'd open my eyes, remember where I was, back in hell. This couldn't be it. I couldn't be blind. Blind people acted like they looked like it look like me.
Andale pues, monkey. Today's the day. Today you are going to get out of bed and let's get you out from under that dirty blanket.
No, no.
Levántate. Come on.
No.
It's sunny outside.
No.
Maybe I was depressed. Stupid antidepressants weren't working. What if I forgot what I looked like? Would I ever know if someone was smiling at me ever again? How would I know? Oh my God. Who would ever love someone that couldn't see?
Monkey, look what my friend Marco from work gave me. It's called Lourdes water from France and it's supposed to help your eyes. I think it's holy water. He said he used to wear glasses and after drinking the water, he doesn't need them anymore. You mix it with...
Would I ever see another sunset? What about all the places in the world I hadn't traveled to yet? And God, what would everybody say about me? There's that weird girl who went blind. She probably deserved it. No, I wouldn't tell anyone. I would lie. Yeah, I would tell them that my eyesight was coming back and that it was just taking a while to heal. Or I'd say that I couldn't see because I wasn't wearing my contacts. Or had LASIK. Or that I just didn't drive at night. Oh, anything but the truth.
Did you see all the carriages that I bought? There's 3 big jugs of it in the fridge, 4 more in the pantry, and 10 more in the garage.
I didn't want to have to depend on other people for help. I didn't want to be a burden.
Are you eating those almonds? They're good for your eyes and they keep you skinny. Eat them.
I didn't want to be some inspirational blind bitch. That wasn't going to be my story.
Lucky, we should go see Father Jose to cleanse your eyes. Ooh. He has us in his prayers.
I didn't want people to pity me, to cheer me on just because I got out of bed.
Monkey, come watch this movie with me. It's called The Secret. I know it's not a telenovela, but we can learn about the law of attraction.
I'm gonna attract my eyesight back?
What? Come, come. Vamos, Ash.
Mom, no. Mom, stop. Mom, leave me alone.
I know, Ashley. Come on. Let's get dressed and leave this room.
This isn't even my room. You rented out my room to Voldemort, the Mexican exchange student.
His name is Valdemar. And he's very nice, and you were not supposed to be here.
I don't care. I miss my room and my job and driving.
Didn't
and...
I tell you? Someone stole the car when you were in Australia.
What?
Yes, it's not parked out front. Didn't you see?
No, I didn't see. Oh, you don't get it, Mom. You just don't get it.
I'm trying to help you, but I can't help you if you don't let me.
I don't need your help. Unless you can fix my eyes, go away. I just miss my old life.
Hi, Ashley. Don't be dramatic.
No, Mom. You heard them. All the doctors, the specialists, the way they apologized. They apologized because they know going blind is the worst thing that could ever happen to somebody.
Monkey, that's not true. That's not the worst. The worst would be being ugly.
Oh, my life is over. The nerves in my eyes are dead. Not recovering, not sprained, not healing, dead.
Ashley. I'll help you and you'll be fine.
Don't want your help. I don't want to be here, in this room, in this house, in this place, and... If I have to be blind, I want to do it in Australia.
Mm.
Yeah, on a beach, drinking boxed wine with my own pet duck, living my old life.
A beach and a dog? Oh, don't be silly. You know you can't do that.
Fuck it. Screw it. Why not? What am I going to walk into on a beach, huh? What's on the beach? I'm blind. I can't see on the beach.
Ashley, no. You can't run away from this. You need to accept what happened to you.
I am going to accept it. I'm going to accept it back in Australia.
Ashley, that's not what I meant. You need to keep seeing doctors here. Maybe get an eye seeing dog and I'll help you learn how to use a cane.
Oh my God, I am never using a fugly cane.
How are you going to cross the street? This is why you need my help.
En esta esquina, Tequila Carolina, poder de su chancla.
I don't need your help, and I'm never using a cane ever.
Y en esta esquina, Gringa Ashley.
Ew. I'm going back to Australia, back to my old life, back to where I had no problems.
What if we went on a trip together? You and me, we could go somewhere, like Edmonton.
Ooh. Oh my God, I don't want to go anywhere with you.
Because I am so bad?
Why do you think I left here in the first place? To get away from you. Come on, you did the same thing to your mom.
I never did anything like that to my mother.
Sure you did. You were the only one of the 10 kids that left Mexico. At least I didn't leave because I was fucking some guy for 3 months.
I fucked him for 6 months.
Ew! God, at least I actually had a life in Australia.
I do have a life too. And it's cleaning up after you.
Yeah. No, it's not. All you ever do is suffocate people.
That's not true. Valdemar is very grateful for everything I've done for him. Why can't you be more like him?
Yeah, and you'll suffocate him too. Just like you did to Dad, and now me. I'm going back to Australia.
No, you're not. You're stupida. You can't live without me.
You're stupida.
You are the stupida. You are gonna stay here with me and with Valdemar.
Oh, I hate you. And stupid Voldemort and this place and...
The more you hate me, the more I love you.
Whatever. I'm going back to Australia and I don't care what you or anyone says and I don't need your fucking help.
I should have left you in New Zealand.
I wish you did. Maybe if I didn't want to get away from you so badly, none of this would have ever happened.
Tenemos un ganador.
And I'm never using a cane.
Right here, right here.
Oh, and I'm never using a cane. Fuck you, I don't need you, Mom. I had Brittany. Yeah. Hey, Siri, call Brittany.
Calling Brittany Mobile.
It's Brittany. my badge, leave a message.
Hey, Britt, I'm not like sad and lame anymore. I know I said I needed you here, but I'm good now, really. Call me back. Bye. Hey, Siri, call Brittany.
Calling Brittany mobile.
It's Friendly Batch, leave a message.
Hey, Britt, I'm good now. Really, I'm not sad and boring anymore. I'm like, hey, Siri, call Brittany now.
Calling Brittany
hey,
mobile.
Hey, it's me.
I gotta figure out what I'm gonna do.
Again.
Calling
call
Brittany
me.
Mobile.
Call me. Call me.
Calling
back.
Brittany
call me.
Mobile.
Siri, call Brittany.
It's Friendly Batch, leave a message.
Britt, call me back. I've called you like a billion times. I know I said I needed you here and that it was hard and it was difficult, but I'm like better now. Kind of. But I'm coming back to Oz. Yay! Call me.
It's Friendly Batch. Like a message.
Text message from Brittany. Hey, Ash. Sorry, it's been a while. I've been so lost on what to do about my situation.
Your situation?
When I heard all your voicemails, I was so distraught. I just prayed to God for hours. I've even gone so far as to start wearing crystals, so that I can be there for you. I know you want me home, but Australia is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. But I don't think it's a good idea you come back here either. I'm so sorry, but I don't know how to take care of a blind person. Miss you. XO.
Whatever. I didn't need her.
Would you like to reply?
Siri, delete message. I had other friends. Yeah, better friends. And I didn't need anyone to take care of me. I'd show her. Nothing had to change. I was gonna keep on living my life just like I always had. Booze, boys, parties, and fun. Fuck you, Brittany. Mom, I'm going to the club. Siri, play my Getting Ready mix. Lashes, fake lashes. Okay, here we go. Just a little bit of glue. Stick it to my eye line. Fuck, how do you know if they're straight? Okay, I think that's okay. Okay, bronzer. Shit. Is this foundation or is this bronzer? Okay, that's whatever. Just a little bit more here, a little bit on my forehead. Oh, and a little in the cleavage. Yep, for a little bit of definition. Lips. I need lip liner. Shit, is this eyeliner or lip liner? Okay, please don't be black. Please don't be black. Okay, I'll just line my lips a little bit. And it should look like I got. Okay, lipstick. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's good. Very Taylor Swift. Okay. Okay, sweet. I look cute. Booze, boys, parties, and fun. Nothing had to change. Except I couldn't drive anymore, so that did change. But I was able to sign up for this free taxi service. Yeah, it meant all of my taxis were free. No more bussing to the club. No more getting my mom to drive me. No more worrying if I had enough money for a cab at the end of the night. This was bad enough. It was about time I got some perks out of this. Oh, so tonight, I booked a cab to take me to the club. And I looked cute. Ooh, if I was ready, it'd be here any minute now. Any minute now. Any minute now. Being late is cool. Fuck, where the fuck is this damn cab? I swear to God, if they're not here soon, they are going to be hearing a complaint from me. I think it's here. Is it a yellow or white cab? Ooh, or maybe a black sedan. It's a what? It's a handy bus? A handy bus? There's no way I'm getting dropped off to the club in a handy bus. Absolutely not. Oh, fuck that. God damn it. Fuck. Mom, can I get a ride to the club?
Okay, monkey, okay. Vámonos. Déjame acomodo. A ver, la musiquita por aquí. key. Lucy. Dennis.
I tried to fit in, to be a normal 20-something, but all I could ever think was, what is everybody saying about me? My social anxiety was at an all-time high. I tried to cope with it, usually by drinking too much. On one messy night out, I told a friend that she didn't deserve to see. On another night, I threw a drink in a friend's face. Things like that happened more often than I'd like to admit. But I was just so angry and sad, I didn't know how to cope with it. I stopped getting invited to things. Birthdays, girls' trips, festivals. I guess people just didn't want to take care of me, or I guess they just didn't want to be around me. Could I blame them? I didn't really want to be around me either. Every day was getting harder than the last, though. The final straw was the taxi incident. I was meeting a friend at the bar.
Ay, 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 horses and divorces. Are you sure this is the bar?
Yes, yes, this is it.
There's so many people. How are you going to find your friends?
It's fine, Mom, it's fine. Just go. Just go. Go, I can do it.
Okay.
The plan was that I would call my friend when I got there, and she'd come outside and meet me. I called when I got there. I called her, but she didn't answer. I called again, and she still didn't answer. But then my phone rang, and it was her. She said she had left and gone to another bar. She wanted me to walk there and meet her. But I couldn't do that. I should have said no. I should have said that I couldn't do that, that I didn't know how to do that. But that wasn't what I said because I didn't want to be a burden. I said, sure, I'll walk and meet you. And then my phone died. But I didn't know where I was going. Was it one block to the right and then two left? Or two to the left and then one right? Shit. Fuck. I started walking, stumbling in my stupid heels as I slowly tried to make it through crowds of drunk, belligerent people. I thought just a little bit further, and I would be there. Then I got to a crosswalk. How would I know it was my turn to cross the street? I listened for the sound of cars, for the sound of cars coming. I didn't hear any. I was sure it was safe to cross the street. I was sure it was safe to walk. But it wasn't.
What the fuck are you doing?
I got hit by a cab.
Watch where you're fucking going.
They stopped only long enough to yell at me before driving away.
Blind drunk.
Are you okay?
Get off the road!
Bystanders on the street shouted at me as if I was some drunk, belligerent girl who just stumbled into the road. I said, I'm not drunk. I'm blind. I'm blind from methanol poisoning. But it didn't matter, because they didn't believe me.
Ugh, drunk bitch.
Ashley, can you see me?
Who would ever love someone they couldn't see?
You are the stupida. I should have left you in New Zealand.
But I don't know how to take care of a blind person.
I'm so sorry, Ashley, but I don't think there's anything else we can do.
I wanted to die in that moment. I wish that taxi had just fucking killed me. I couldn't do it anymore. It had been years by this point. And I was trying to accept it. I was trying to move on. I was trying to accept being blind. But what if I just never accepted it? God, you don't want to keep on hearing this. The sob story is pathetic. You probably wanted to listen to an inspirational story. Yeah, I don't know how to do that. Do you think it's my fault? You probably think that I deserve this. I bet you think that I wish it happened to Brittany, that Brittany was poisoned instead of me. You probably think that I should have came home from my trip when I was supposed to, that I should have listened to my mom. Maybe it would just be easier if I wasn't here. For you and everybody else. Yeah. Yeah. It could all just end here. The story could just end here. I wouldn't have to do it anymore. Yeah. You would understand. My mom would understand. Right? Right? I can walk, right?
Sí, pero this is more fun. Do you want me to read you your Bible passage from this week? It's John 12:48.
No, I'm fine, thanks. Is that? Do you smell? Are you smoking?
No. Maybe. Can you see that?
No, I can't see that. I can smell it. Mom, you can't smoke in a hospital.
Oops.
And since when do you smoke?
It's new. And I only do it when I'm stressed.
Oh. You know the nice nurse said that only hot girls go to psych? Madonna? Spears? Lohan? But I don't actually feel very hot right now. I actually feel kind of stupid.
No, you're not stupid. Oh, I saw they had O'Henry at the vending machine, and I bought them all for you, monkey. Here, all for you.
Thanks. Mom.
Sí, mija.
I don't want to be here.
Your doctor said we can leave soon. They just have to do some more tests.
No, that's not what I mean.
You mean you want to be back in Australia?
No, I don't want to be anywhere.
Ay, monkey. Don't be dramatic.
No, Mom, I'm serious. I can't live like this. I thought I could figure it out. I thought I could do it, but I just can't.
But you don't have to do this alone. I'm here.
No,
I can help you.
And
No. You're going to get through this. We are going to get through this. You're not alone. I'm here. Don't give up. Keep on trying. Monkey. You can do this. You're strong. Escúchame, mami. Escúchame. You're resilient. Please just keep trying. Por favor, monkey. ¿For me? Dime, ¿qué necesitas? ¿Qué puedo hacer por ti? I'd give you my eyes if I could. San Judas, por favor. Si tú pudieras ayudar.
Can you get me a blanket?
Sí. Sí, monkey. Of course.
I felt like such a dick. She was trying so hard. But it wasn't what I needed. I don't even know what I needed. I needed someone to tell me that it was okay, that I wasn't okay, and that what had happened to me was incredibly shitty and it never should have happened, and that it would be okay if I never accepted it. But she was never gonna say that. She truly believed I was gonna be okay. She wanted to keep on fighting, keep on trying. Maybe I could try for her. Well, that was poetic of you, Ashley. In the iconic words of Aaliyah, get up and try again. That's part 3 of Static, a party girl's memoir, written by me, Ashley King. I'm playing myself, and Britt. Jaime Cesar is playing the indomitable Carolina. This podcast is being produced by Meg Wilcox. Hey, Meg.
Hey, Ashley.
So, we both agreed that Carolina needed to be a part of this, but I didn't want to do the interview. I didn't think she'd be upfront with me because we ain't that vulnerable with one another, so I asked you to do it. And honestly, I was happy to do it. You know, I do enough interviews in my day-to-day, but I have to also say I was a bit worried because at this point, I never actually met your mom, but I'd read through the script, seen the rehearsals, heard personal stories about Carolina, and like, honestly, she was a bit of a celebrity and like a myth to me, and so I was a little nervous.
Well, you did a great job because you got way more out of her. Well, I don't know because I haven't heard it yet, but you were going to be able to get way more out of her than she would ever give me. She does better with complete strangers than her own offspring, I think.
Which I find so interesting, but it also kind of makes sense to me a bit. So that's why I was willing to go in as a stranger and ask these very personal questions. So we arranged to meet one afternoon at your place for the interview. You weren't there for the interview because that would have defeated the purpose. But I also want to mention that you did help with the questions. So this wasn't something that was totally random. There was stuff you kind of wanted to know. But as you said, you actually haven't heard this interview yet.
I have not heard this interview. I don't even really remember the questions because that feels like it was so long ago. So I'm going to be hearing this for the first time with everybody else.
So here it is. This is my conversation with the woman, the myth, the legend, the one and only Carolina King. My understanding is you haven't read the script, but you have been at a performance, a read through.
Yes.
So you've heard an early version. And I'm wondering, what parts of the play do you think Ashley gets right about Carolina? And maybe what are some things that you're like, oh, maybe not so accurate?
You know, I would say that pretty much everything she say is true. The way she described me, that's the way I am. Yes, sometimes I was a little bit tough. Sometimes it was, you know, typical mom, love my daughter. I can let you do whatever you want. But pretty much whatever she said is it's true. Yeah.
So you are Tequila Carolina then?
No. Well, yes, kind of. I don't like tequila. I will be honest. Yes.
Fair. So I was wanting to chat with you a bit about your memories of some of the times that Ashley talks about in static in the play. So, for example, you know, the play shows you getting the phone call from the doctors in New Zealand and having to fly back to, you know, to see Ashley. And I'm wondering, from that time, I imagine it's a blur, but do you have any specific memories or things that stick out from that time and being on that 15-hour flight?
It was very pregnant day, evening, I will say, because I was in the evenings when I had the phone call from New Zealand. In a million years, I never thought something like that would happen to my daughter. Very, very scared when I had the phone call. When I get on the plane, I didn't know what I was going to expect when I get there. I work in the hospital, so I kind of have a feeling on my heart then it wasn't going to be good. And I was expecting the worst, I will be honest with you. It was a nightmare. From the time I get into the plane, I was praying every single minute I was on the plane. Just God, let me make sure when I get there, my daughter's alive. And I will take it. I will love her no matter what the way she is. I thought she was going to be vegetable. I was crying all the way. All the way. I was in a city, I was in a continent, and I didn't be there. I was alone. I remember when I get into the plane, I get in the taxi, and I was afraid to get in the hospital. As a mom, I don't want anybody to go through this. It was a nightmare. I don't give any emotional. I didn't cry very much after the accident because I was trying to be very strong for her. But I feel she was lost and I didn't know how to help her. I wish I could give her my eyes. And I still want one day she might be going to be able to see me.
I can take a second. Yeah.
And I should say, if there's any time you don't want to answer a question, you want to take a break, anything, just let me know.
I imagine the stress of not knowing what you're walking in to see. You hadn't seen Ashley in months. She'd been traveling. She'd been away. And then you also mentioned that, you know, you worked in a hospital. You know how bad things can be. And when you saw her, when you were able to actually, you know, meet and give her a hug, what do you remember from that?
It was relief that she was alive. I didn't know how much she can see it at the time. When I had the phone call from the doctors, they told me how soon you can come. I knew it. It's not going to be easy. Something else is going to be coming from there. She was very angry when she saw me. She thought, Mom, what are you doing here? I said, I come to be with you. You don't have to be here. I said, why? I'm going to be fine. Like, on her mind, she was hoping that everything was going to be okay. Nothing happened. What is the reason for you to be here? I didn't know anything about methanol poison. I have no idea. How did she get? I always thought maybe drugs. I said, my daughter doesn't use any drugs. Why? What's happening? We never put it together, all this situation, until days later. But I was happy to see her. Then she was still alive. And I said, God, thank you so much. I'll take you. And I was ready to take it back to Canada. But she was, no, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to continue traveling. But I think both me and her, we were aware. We were not ready for whatever was coming. We don't know how severe it was. We're looking that way. Yeah, she's going to be better. Let's go back to Canada. Just wait a few more months, and then you can go back traveling. Until the next day, a few days later, when she told me, Mom, I can't see anything. Mm-hmm. And then it hit me.
It's funny you say that, because Ashley was saying when she was interviewing Dr. G that she didn't realize how bad things were at first, partly because the doctors were so kind and they were working to keep her calm, and that she started to realize, you know, the severity of mm-hmm. where things were. But it was about a month that she was in the hospital in New Zealand. And so you weren't just there for a day or two before mm-hmm. taking her home. What was it like for you being at the hospital, and how long were you there for?
Like you say, we were there maybe for 2-3 weeks in the hospital. One the time, then we find out when the doctors, and she started to feel that she wasn't able to see properly that few days. In the beginning, she said, Mom, I'm going to be fine. Don't worry about it. And then I start to look on the internet about methanol poison. What could happen? What could have happened? What could have done properly? Because I say to her, and I keep telling all the time, I said, you know, you're able to work. You're able to do a lot of things that people cannot do it. Yes, maybe you have some problems with your eyes later on, but I didn't think or thought that was going to be really bad until we came back to Canada. And I thought, you know, well, maybe there is something they can do for you. As the day go by every day, and she said, Mom, every morning, oh, I think I'm going to be fine. It hit me really bad when we came back to Canada. Then we knew it. After all the doctors to try over there, every day it was a long day. Every time we had to go to see the doctors in the morning or in the afternoon, it was almost a hope. Maybe there will be something there they can do for you. We can try anything. And I say to her, I don't care how much it's going to cost us. We're going to try everything is there available for you to do it. It was a long haul, and you're right, we were both alone there. It was hard to deal with that. It wasn't easy.
Well, and you mentioned then coming home, you know, the comfort of being able to come home and it being familiar, but then being put through this roller coaster of doctor's appointments and will this fix something? Will it not? You know, Ashley was really trying to figure out how she saw her future, right, with this big change. But I imagine you're also trying to imagine what Ashley's future might be, what your future might be. And I guess I'm wondering, what was going through your head? I think, at least from the play, it strikes me that you did a very good job of hiding from Ashley how you felt and your worries. And I'm wondering if you were willing to share some of those thoughts you had.
You know, it was when we came back to Canada, like I said, it was hard. And tried to find ways, venues, how can I help you? How we can make this, how we're going to do it? I had to learn a lot from her, from whatever the people, the doctors were telling me, you had to do this. Around the house, I knew it. And she knew it the way the house was. Before, I didn't remove anything. The furniture, it was still the same. It was hard for her to accept it. Every time I would say, can I help you? She wouldn't take any help at all. I can do it myself, Mom. I went to work every day, and I would call her from work. How you doing? I'm okay. Sometimes she wouldn't answer my phone. I would come home, and she would be in bed. Everything, windows closed, dark, and the darkness. I knew it. She was depressed. And I will come and I say, how can I help you? What can I do for you? She was always very angry. And it doesn't matter what I say, it doesn't matter what I do. And I say, you know, you can yell at me, you can scream to me. I know you had to let it go. You had to get this angry of you. And that's the only way we can get through. We're going to try everything we can. Mom, you work. I don't care, I used to say. We're going to put it together. I will come home and I will strip the bed. Get out of the bed. I don't want you to be in bed. I'm fine, Mom. No, you're not fine. She used to come upstairs because her she used to sleep downstairs in the basement. And I will sit over here when I'm making dinner. No, I'm not hungry. No, I'm not going to eat it. I can do it myself. And there were so many times like she will knock herself on the table with the chair. It was a learning even for me. How are we going to do this? Where are we going to get the help that we needed? First, we start with the doctors, and then the doctors put me through the CNIB. She didn't want to go. She didn't want to seek any help. On her mind was, Mom, and she always used to say, Mom, I'm going to go back to Australia, and I'm going to keep traveling. How are we going to do it? Oh, don't worry, I will find my way. I was very, very afraid that she was going to take the reins and they say, I go back to Australia. I'm so happy that she stayed. It wasn't very easy either. I used to go to work. Everybody has to work. How are you doing? And I always said, I'm okay. Before I started my shift, I would stay in my car in the parking and cry. That was my moment to relieve all my sadness, my anger. I will come to my work on my floor, and when I see all my patients, how they go through cancer, moms with kids like me, and I will come up and I say, you know, Ashley, we can do it. You're still alive, and that's all that matters. And we're going to get through this. Slowly, we did it, and we're still doing it.
Mm-hmm. I imagine, you know, as a parent, you've always have, you know, dreams and hopes for your kid. And maybe at this point, you were just working on getting through day to day, and you didn't think about it. But I wonder, were you worried about what Ashley's future might look like? Did you have concerns at that point, or was it just trying to get through day to day?
I think we tried to do it day to day, you're right. Yes, I will worry about her future, what's going to be. She always have a lot of hopes. She always want to be actor. I said, what are you going to be when you grow up? I'm going to be an actor. And I used to say, well, you're not going to make enough money. Don't worry, am I going to be a really rich actor? I'm going to have my motorhome. And I said, how about me? She said, oh, you can come and see me. But I'm going to be traveling all the time. So don't worry, I'm going to be fine. I knew it. She was going to struggle a lot to have a future. Of course, like every mom's, I was worried. What are we going to do? And she was always very independent. She always worked when she was 14 years old. And she always used to say, Mom, but I need to work. How are you going to make it? I need money. I said, don't worry. I can work extra chef for you, and that's going to be your money. No, Mom, I want to have my own money. I said, well, you know what? You still have a future. You can have a career. No, I can't, Mom. I can't see it. I'm going to be your eyes. If you have to go to school and I have to go with you, I will go with you. And we're going to do it together. And she just looked at me. Mom, how are you going to be with me in the school? It's okay. I can start from over again. No worries. But how about your job? I said, I can combine my job, but I'm going to be right there with you. From day one, we're going to do it together until you figure out what you want to do for your life. She always used to say, but who's going to love me that way? You will find somebody who loves you for who you are. Don't worry. It will happen. And sorry, but whoever come into your life, it's going to be Mom and you, because I'm always going to be there for you. And I always call me and I'll be there. I'm going to be driving. I'm going to be doing everything you know supposed to be doing it. I'm going to do it for you.
You talk about, you know, the depression at the beginning, trying to figure out, you know, what next steps are going to be, where it's going to look like. Do you have a memory of a moment where you knew Ashley was going to be okay?
Yes. When she decided, or when she was able to accept the way she was, that's when I knew she was going to be okay. And from the moment she started to ask for help, I knew she was going to be okay. I've always been a worried mama. And through this ordeal or through these years, I'm always worried about her. And like she always say, Mom, why are you asking me any questions? Because I need to know that you're going to be okay wherever you're going. So from the time that she asked for help, I knew it. She was going to be okay. I remember very clear. We were driving maybe at school, somewhere, an appointment. And I'm driving. She's my passenger. And automatically I will say, Ashley, is the car coming? And she would say, Mom, I cannot see it. Oh, my God, I forget about that. And we were both burst laughing. I knew she was going to be okay because we can laugh at the situation without being angry, neither one.
Do you remember the first thing she asked for help with?
Yes. I think we were possible at the bank or coffee shop. Every time, we were always together. Everywhere she was going, I was always with her. Appointments, anything, school. We were at the store, and I'm always ready to go and ask and try to make her life easy around anywhere she was. And she told me, she said, Mom, can you let me be? I'm going to be okay. And I stepped back, and she asked for help. So I knew it. She was going to be good.
And in that moment, she was also asking for space from you, which I imagine is hard after wanting to be so close and to look after. So how do you manage now that, you know, Ashley's living independently and many of these other things? How do you balance that wanting to be there for her and also knowing that she might need her space?
You know, it was hard, right, in the beginning when she said, Mom, I need a space. I need to be on my own and I need to be able to do a lot of things on my own. It was hard in the beginning because, like you say, mom for me is, I had to be with you no matter what. When she showed me and I can see, then she was doing okay. And even until now, I say to her, call me, I don't care what time it is, I will come and be for you. But I think it was when she started to show me then she was able to do a lot of things and capable more than anything to do it on her own. Mm-hmm. I mean, now I still worry for her. Sometimes can go a couple of days without talking. I will be calling. How you doing? What do you need? Typical mom. I want to come home. I want to come to her place and do whatever I can. Make her life a little bit easy. I know she's capable to do it, but I don't know why. I feel like I have to be there all the time. But now, I just let it go slowly. I feel like I let it go a little bit slowly. I mean, maybe one day I'm going to be here for her. So she had to learn, and she had to be very strong to do it on her own.
Comparing to those early days in New Zealand or even just coming back to Canada to now, Ashley's life and where she's at, is this what you imagined or better than you imagined? Or looking at it, how far she's come in that amount of time, how far both of you have come?
She come way far than I expected. I know she struggled a lot. And I know my daughter really good. So I know when she tried to achieve something and doesn't come the way she wanted, she can be very defined. But she always finds the way to do it. I'm very happy the way she right now accomplished. And every day is a new day. It's a new learning for her. Maybe for me too. I just hope then one day she will be happy more than what she is now and say, Mom, I did it. And I know she will. It's been so many years, and I notice every year is getting better and better. And the more she does and the more she feels that she's capable to do it, she's more happy with her life.
What did you think when Ashley first said she was going to start to write a play about how she became blind?
I didn't quite thought she was going to do it. But like I said, when she put something in her mind, I know she will do it. And when she told me she was going to do it, I knew she was ready to open up and talk about her life. And I think it will help a lot of people too. I don't see my daughter as a disabled. I see like Ashley, my daughter. And she's always going to be my baby. I always tell her that. I know she will do a lot. And she will do more than what she thinks she can do it.
And how does it feel to be such a big part of the story, right? Like on one hand, this is about Ashley getting poisoned. But really, you know, this story is, I feel like it's a bit of a love letter to you. That you're the only other main character in this story, and it's about your relationship. So how does it feel to know that Ashley's chosen to portray this in her first play that she's writing?
I don't know how I can describe this, but it's a hard one too.
How does it make you feel?
It made me feel very proud, Mom, more than anything. And like I said, we've been through so many years with this life, a second life. I always say to her, you have a chance to have a second life. It made me feel so proud.
Mommy.
So, Ash, what surprised you about the conversation?
Oh, my God. All of it and none of it. Like, I knew she wouldn't have given me any of that. She would have gave me yes and no answers. I knew you would have got much more out of her. A lot surprised me. I'm surprised how similar the story is for both of us. I wrote this play with not a lot of feedback from her, and I really had to imagine how my mom was feeling during all these years. I had to think about what my mom's perspective might be from what I saw myself and what I how I would imagine life was in her shoes, a little bit from things she told me, but a lot of it from me guessing because she's not that big of an open book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised how many things she said that literally are in the play and are exactly how I remember it and pretty accurate to how she remembers it.
And I should say this was before she saw the play.
That we yeah, did this interview. Is all before she saw
so,
the play.
You know, I wonder her watching the play if she almost thought about that too. But yeah, continue.
Yeah, it's like she was picking out scenes from the play yes. and talking about them, which I thought was so interesting because, yeah, at this point she's not seen the play, at least for the most recent version of it. And then the other thing that really got me was her moments of breaking down and when she did that, because I assumed she had her moments and I thought about putting them in the play where Carolina would have her own scene on stage where she breaks down and she has to try and hold it together for Ashley. But I would have been making it all up because I didn't know when she did that. And hearing her cry in her car before work starts, yeah, that really hit me, you know, that when someone goes through something really traumatic, it's not just the person going through it, it's their support system that also goes through it. And it wasn't just me mourning the loss of my eyesight, but it was my mom mourning the loss of my eyesight and, you know, the future she thought that I was going to have and the future she thought she was going to have. And I always say that what I went through was really difficult, but what my mom went through has always been way harder because she's the one who had to fly across the world not knowing if I was alive or dead. And I just was drunk in a hospital. Like, really not giving a care about the world. And it's funny how she sees me, how determined I was to go back to Australia or to keep on traveling, because all that is true. I was really like, why the hell are you here in New Zealand? Like, I'm going to go back to backpacking tomorrow. You know, so yeah, it just kind of blows my mind how for us not really, we don't really have open conversations about our feelings and we don't really talk about, I know I wrote a play about it, but we don't really talk about this kind of stuff. So to hear her say it and know that it's so similar to how I look back on it just feels, you know, that we were going through it together.
Well, and you mentioned feeling hit when your mom talked about driving to work and crying in the car before work. And that one hit for me. It's funny. I think in the interview you can hear Carolina's tears a little bit more because she was talking more. And I guess I have enough broadcast training experience that I talk through it. But like my eyes were not dry during that interview either. And I'm starting to tear up now thinking about that moment in particular because I was thinking not only is she driving to work and having this moment to break down, but then she describes having to go and be with other parents that are about to lose their kids, you know, for a health reason that is, you know, terminal. And I know, you know, she would often come back to you and she said in the interview, like, you know, you have so many things, you can work through it. When you're in that moment, you can't necessarily see that. You can't necessarily feel that. And that was not a blind joke about me saying you couldn't see it.
I caught it.
But that idea of having that perspective for her of both the struggles at home and your challenges and having to work out your mindset and deal with your trauma and your anger is totally justified, but feeling caught between those two worlds just...
Yeah, you know, my mom's always been someone who, in going through all this, has always been like, you know, it could be worse. We could be worse. Like, we could not have a house over our heads. You might not be able to walk. You could be, you know, at least you have, like, your health elsewhere. And I think sometimes I would forget that she sees every day how it could be worse. You know, sometimes when someone tells you that, I'm like, it couldn't get any more worse than this. Like, my life is over. But she really saw examples every day going to work, working in the cancer unit at the hospital. I still have a future. And a lot of other people don't have that. A lot of other people don't get that choice.
This interview makes me think a bit about your interview with Dr. G in the previous episode and the idea that, you know, static is told through your perspective, through Ashley's perspective, and it should be, right? But it makes me realize all of these other perspectives and people that have been shaped by the story in a way that maybe you didn't realize at first, or in some cases you did kind of know, but maybe didn't know directly from not having, say, conversations with your mom or not feeling like that something that could be talked about. But I think it shows the reach in through many people. While it directly affected you, no question, there's many other people that are part of the story.
Yeah, and I often forget that anybody else is a part of the story. Being blind is such an isolating thing. And I forget that there's other people who have been affected in some shape or way of what I went through. And it is weird as we go through this journey of chatting to people who have had a hand in the creation of this play, but have had a hand into where I am today. Yeah, it's surreal.
And I do want to say, you know, we had this interview with your mom before she saw the play.
Mm.
And that she felt that it was pretty accurate. But on opening night, I did go and say hi to you and Carolina after. And I asked her again. I said, Carolina, okay, now that you've seen it, like, do you really think that it was accurate? And she said, yes. Yes, it was so good. She got it right. So I find it so funny that on one hand, there is a bit of a caricature, but Carolina can see the heart of that character and how well Jaime plays Carolina as well. And, you know, this idea of this play, as you've said in the past, that it's a love story, but it's with you and your mom.
Yeah, it really is. As much as my mom and I have driven each other nuts over the years, like she's been my constant, you know, the last 13 years and even prior to that. And something has bonded us together that most parent-child relationships may not have, because I gained a disability later on in life and went blind. And that has affected our relationship. But let's be honest, even if I wasn't blind, my mom would still be overbearing and still would be very much up in my shit. But I couldn't imagine her any other way, I guess.
And so this episode, you know, Ashley is going through it, I think is the we're, you know, glazing over a lot of things there. But it ends on you deciding that the main reason you're going to try is for your mom. And I'm wondering, was this a convenient arc for your story, or was this how you felt?
Yes and yes. It was a convenient arc for the story because the story had to eventually move on at some point. But it was kind of the arc in my life because the only other option I had was death. Like, suicide was my other option. And the only reason I didn't actually pursue it was because what it would do to my mom. So, like, the reason that I actually was going to try and actually, you know, really have a crack at just figuring out how to get through this all was because of my mom. You know, she's been through so much as well, and like what I do affects her and the choices I make affect her. And so if I couldn't do it for myself, then the only other person I was going to do it for is for her.
So we're moving on to the final episode of Static. And, you know, as you say, it's moving on for her and for you. What does trying look like?
I don't fucking know. I'm still trying to figure it out. I don't know. Let's go to the next episode and find out.
Let's do it.
Okay. Let's try. This is Static, a Party Girls memoir, written by me, Ashley King, and produced by Meg Wilcox. Special thanks to Jaime Cesar, Michelle Brandenburg, Miranda Martini, Inside Out Theater, Chromatic Theater, and the Community Podcast Initiative at Mount Royal University for making this podcast possible. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate, review, and tell a friend. Find me on Instagram at ashkng or at my website, ashleyjenniferking.com. See you for the final episode.